Good afternoon, Tucson. You're listening to The Buckmaster Show here on KVOI 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Sitting in for Bill, I'm Dylan Smith from the Tucson Sentinel, and joining me here in the studio is one of our most excellent Sentinel reporters, senior reporter Paul Ingram.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for taking the time away from all those stories that we have you working on to dig into this. Today, especially, we're going to be digging into plenty of city issues because joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line is City Manager Tim Tomier. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Dylan. It's good to be on the phone with you. Sorry I couldn't make it over there in person today.
you're just trying to dodge the physical abuse. We'll just have to hit you with some verbal abuse instead.
Sparring with words is my favorite way to go.
Well, since you're in the hot seat, let's talk about the biggest burning issue right now. It is, again, budget season. You are hunting for dollars. Both dollars that you can spend and dollars you can cut out of things. Give us a quick sketch of where you are in the process between, you know, city staff and the city council and taking public input and what's going on.
Sure. We are getting pretty close to where the final budget would be adopted. That happens the first week of June. And so the path to get there really starts in the spring, early spring. We have a lot of engagement with the public. We put things together. And on April 22nd is when myself and my team, we put together and presented to the council the what's called the city manager's recommended budget. And it kind of lays out a full balanced budget for the city across all of its different revenue sources and needs, which we did. And we've had a couple of mayor and council study sessions and one public hearing since then. And I'm pleased to say that largely that initial budget is held together. It not without concern and not without a lot of discussion, but right now we do have a balanced budget for next year, but it did come with some cuts.
How much money are we talking about overall?
So the total city budget is just over $2.4 billion, billion with a B, and that does include all of our services, including our operation of Tucson Water, environmental services, all of our highway and revenue funds. So of that $2.4 billion, roughly $750 million is what we call the general fund, which is where we have discretion on what to spend on, but that's also the fund where we serve police, or where we fund police, fire, housing, parks and rec, and a lot of the services that people receive from the city.
Even inside that $750 million general fund, a lot of that is not exactly discretionary money, right? You have a certain level of service that people have come to expect, and you have to spend that money.
That's correct. So probably about two-thirds of that budget is already committed to core services of the city, like public safety, like parks and recreation. These are our mandated services in our charter. These are not just mandated, but also expected by the community. They're kind of what makes a city. So the lion's share of the general fund itself is also committed before we even start.
So when you're really trying to move some money around and make these determinations and recommendations, it's a far cry from that overall $2 billion.
That's very fair. It sounds like a lot of money and it is, but we also are constrained by, you do the things that our people pay the money to receive, like water service, like taxes that are paid for revenue, highway revenue fund, things of that nature. So we are really, truly working along the margins of what discretion means and our ability to move money from priority to priority.
How much of that money is, what's the difference between this year's budget and last year's budget? How much of a cut are you seeing?
The total budget is very similar. It was just over $2.4 billion last year. The growth has occurred in the general fund. It's probably around $20 to $25 million higher than last year. Part of that is changes in how much federal funding we have available that, you know, bring the overall total to be roughly the same. But a lot, the vast majority of that increase in spending is to cover increasing costs of labor, of contracted services. So it's not really per se an expansion of service. It's really just breaking even of what we've done in past years with some cut, you know, cuts associated.
How have changes in federal dollars affected you? You know, over the past several years, you've seen a lot of that the COVID-19 relief money go away, basically, right? Those funds have been used up. Are there other changes that you're dealing with? You know, we hear a lot about how the Trump administration is very suddenly, you know, ending federal grant programs of all sorts. Has that hit the city yet?
Really, it is starting to see that now. We have about $285 million of federal dollars through, you know, competitive grants and other programs that have been awarded to the city but not yet expended, and some of those dollars are at risk. Now, it's not that all of those dollars have been withdrawn or withheld or delayed. Some of the federal programs do continue to move forward. It might be in fits and starts because sometimes even the payment portal that you use to draw down federal funds are offline certain days but on other days. But we have seen some of our transportation funding actually be withdrawn. And the biggest latest news is the community lost about has had truly canceled a $20 million investment, of which $7 million would have gone to the city. And that's, you know, just the money that we competed for, were awarded, and now it's just not going to come to Tucson.
How much of the money also did you get from, like, the Infrastructure Act and also the Inflation Reduction Act? I mean, there's some of those dollars are still around, aren't they?
That is true. Through the Inflation Reduction Act, a lot of the funding that the city receives through that is in two main areas. One is our ability to increase tree canopy in Tucson, and those dollars are still flowing because you know, that's also even with this federal administration, there's a commitment to understanding the value of tree canopy, and then in the water space. So we have about an $87 million funding for a project in the water space through the Inflation Reduction Act. We all signals are still go, green lights on that one. And then under the bipartisan infrastructure law, that's where we've seen a mixed bag. We've had some grants for infrastructure remain, and then we've had some grants for infrastructure either delayed or just outright stopped.
So how do you handle that, you know, when you might lose a grant or you might lose federal funding? I mean, how do you spend the money and just kind of hope for the best, or how do you kind of manage that?
That's a great question. So there are some things that we spend the money and hope for the best, and then we just have to be prepared for if the reimbursement doesn't come, how do we adjust? And so things like our Housing First program and other things are things we're committed to and we need to do, and we know that we're going to have to shore it up on the back end if those grants, you know, are terminated. But then there are projects that get canceled. If you don't have the money to build the thing, you can't build the thing. So there's a, you know, core infrastructure that's at risk by of projects not getting done.
One specific project that kind of came to my attention driving across town the other day. It's been in the works for a long, long time. The replacement of the 22nd Street Bridge. The city and federal officials under the Biden administration made a big deal about how that was going to happen. But then there was some, public concern about the design that was pulled back to make some changes, take some more input. What's the state of that now? Is it happening? Is it not happening?
Ultimately, that 22nd Street Bridge replacement or repair project, well, it needs to happen. That bridge is not imminent or falling over, but it is no longer where we can even put school buses or emergency vehicles, or there's certain types of traffic, we just cannot allow to go over that bridge. So you are right. That project's been in the works for years, and we actually have the funding assembled between city dollars, county bond dollars, the Regional Transportation Authority, and a $25 million federal grant. All of that's ready to go, and you are correct. We did have additional public input, and I think we came to a great solution on the design to accommodate all of that. It's one of the rare times where it took us a bit, but I think we've made everybody happy with what we intend to do. But that project is stuck because, the grant was frozen for a period of time, and now it's in a queue of a lot of grants that the federal government is processing to say, can you actually proceed with the project? And so we have that project designed, funded, and ready to go to bid, but we are still waiting a authority from the Federal Highway Administration to put it out on the street and get it built.
So kind of a holding pattern, just waiting for them to give you a rubber stamp?
That's correct. But that rubber stamp, they might pick up the one that says okay to proceed, or they might pick up the one that says canceled. And we expect the one that says okay to proceed, but it's a little bit hard to predict right now.
And then the $25 million that you would be getting from the feds, how much of a percentage of the project is that?
That's roughly about 15% of the project. So it is significant. The question will be if that funding was withdrawn, we still need to do the project. So there's a few less palatable options we'd have to look at to see how we can at least make that bridge sustainable, safe, and maybe instead of a 40-year renewal, it's how do we get another 10 years out of it? It's not good. But it's not impossible.
So if you don't get the federal money, to be clear, you won't be able to build a new bridge, but you just work on shoring up the old one.
That's exactly right. That's a very likely outcome because, not to get too nerdy on you, but the superstructure of the bridge itself is functional and steady. It's actually the decking that the parts you drive on that does need to be replaced. However, the full replacement and rebuilding of the bridge would actually make it safe long-term, and it actually creates more space for the Union Pacific switchyard to operate more safely. It provides better pedestrian and bicycle access across that bridge than what exists now. So the replacement project fully funded is a long-term and superior product than what we would have to do if we only just focused on replacing the decking.
Tim Tomier, Tucson City Manager, we have a caller on the line. Greg, who's a listener, has a suggestion for saving some taxpayer money. So go ahead, Greg.
Well, thanks, Dylan. And I know you're coming up on a break here momentarily, so I'll try to keep it brief. First off, I'm really impressed with our city manager because this gentleman has the nuts and bolts in his mind about the bridge and other issues you brought up. If I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, if someone gets arrested in the city, do we pay the county to house that person in the jail? I'll start with that question, then get to my point.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate the compliment. And yes, the county sheriff owns and operates the jail, and so we do pay dollars for when we book somebody into the jail.
So here's a suggestion. Let's say it's some guy riding his bicycle without a light on it, and he gets cited, and they don't take him to jail that night, but then there's a warrant issued for his arrest because he didn't appear, and he doesn't have the $500 bail, so we're paying. He might be there a month or two or three. Same with a prostitute gets arrested. We're talking about folks where I consider these victimless crimes. And in some cities across the country, they've even set up a fund. They put a chunk of money into a fund so that if the judge says, well, the bail is going to be $300-$400, they pay for that bail, and 90% of the time the person appears in court. So is anything being done, or can we do anything so that we're not wasting those dollars on folks who have committed these crimes, in quotes, so that we can save the city money?
I think that's a great area to explore, and I'll share. The answer is going to be we do some of that, but you've brought up the idea of having kind of a revolving fund that could be used to post bail. I don't believe we do that at the moment, and that's a pretty clever idea. We do try to empower our officers to be able to make choices in the field about, you know, what's worth bringing somebody to the jail. And our goal is not to have people in jail, especially when you're talking about crimes of the nature you're talking about. That's not serving the community or the individual or public safety. What I'll say is some of the things we do is we have special warrant days where we create a risk-free environment for somebody to come in and get a warrant resolved without having to pay costs or have the risk of future arrest. We are working on also the ability to have, and again, I'm going to nerd out on you. You know, that there's this cost when you bring somebody to the jail and then they have to be medically cleared and then they have this initial appearance and then they get booked into the jail. But they might already be in the jail by the time they get an initial appearance. It's just kind of this whole ecosystem of how it works. And we are working with our presiding magistrate and our officers in the field to see if we can do an initial appearance through video in the field, which means we would not actually have to transport that person to the jail and actually maybe even book them into the jail. But we can still do an initial appearance and conditions of release and all the things that would happen in the jail, especially with nonviolent crime, that gets the person that needs to have their justice system journey started in a less expensive way, but also less impactful to the time of the police officer and less impactful to the individual, but then also on a path to resolve that warrant much quicker. So that's actually a really good idea that I think could add to the mix of, you know, cost avoidance, but not accountability avoidance. And that's really where we're centered.
Trying to be a little more efficient. And we do need to be efficient here on the radio because our time is limited. Greg, thanks so much for your call and your question, your comment. We need to take a brief break here. We'll be back in a minute with Tucson City Manager Tim Tomier. I do have to tell you that support for the Buckmaster Show comes from the Pima Council on Aging, where the hidden costs of aging, such as loneliness, falls, and financial stress, do not go unnoticed. PCOA connects older adults to critical support that helps them age safely at home. You can learn more at PCOA.org. And we will be right back.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show here on KVOI 1030 The Voice. Sitting in for Bill, I'm Dylan Smith from the Tucson Sentinel. Joining me here in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio is our senior reporter at the Sentinel, Paul Ingram.
Hey.
And on the Buckmaster Live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, is Tucson City Manager Tim Tomier. And I should probably clarify, the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, not Tim Tomier.
That's correct. I might have some sponsorships, but I'm lacking that one right now.
You don't have like a like a race car driver suit with a bunch of patches all over it?
That's just what I was thinking. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I think we might have to arrange something like that. It'd be cool. It'd be cool.
Well, that's how you bolster the city budget, right?
You know, we're looking at any alternative right now, and that certainly sounds like a good one. Possibly illegal.
Well, City Attorney Mike Rankin might have a few things to say about it, but you can safely ignore him, right?
You know, Mr. Rankin usually can find a way.
I mean, the problem is he sits next to you in the city council chambers, so it might be hard to ignore him.
Is he kicking you under the table a lot?
Usually we're just having little side bets going about how long the meeting will run.
You guys haven't been too bad lately, actually. Well, not you guys, but the city council, because it's kind of up to them. But the Board of Supervisors the other day, ooh boy, they had a long one, a doozy.
Well, didn't the city council meeting also run 8 hours with the study session too?
Well, they split it up with a couple of breaks at least, right?
Well, that's true.
That's true. The breaks are needed for a variety of reasons.
We could really dig into the issues around policing and the city's relationship with the sheriff's department and everything. I can kind of recount quickly some of our recent reporting on that. I can tell folks that the police department, as you indicated, Tim, has really taken a good hard look about the folks that they are transporting to the jail, and if it's worth it to actually bring them in and incur all those costs and slow down the system and everything. And there is at least one private effort to have a bail fund to raise money to bail folks out who are in there for a long time, perhaps unnecessarily. There are some people who do end up in the jail who are not there for violent crimes against other folks. But it's, I would say it's interesting that you are, really taking a holistic approach of that, especially the idea of having people do their initial appearances right there, kind of at the scene. That could really kind of make things a whole lot more efficient and cost effective, couldn't it?
It really could. I mean, it does have challenges on the back end because you need to have access to a judge at the moments when you need them. Mm-hmm. So it's likely something we would pilot for certain hours of the day, because the officer in the field needs to be able to know they can get on the call and get access to justice that way. But we don't currently have magistrates on 24/7, and these things don't happen usually at Tuesday at 2 o'clock.
It's 2 o'clock in the morning, right?
It's a different kind of 2 o'clock. But I think it's with anything else, if we can demonstrate that it works and it does, and it's not just about saving money. It's speed of justice. It's actually and it's actually better for the person. It's better for the community when you're able to not have people unnecessarily in the jail. And I think the sheriff would agree with that. I don't believe their goal is to have as many people in the jail as they can. I think their goal is to operate the jail for the purposes of protecting public safety. And there are times when the jail is the right outcome, but it's not always the right outcome. And right now we need to find ways where you don't have to flow through the jail in order to get to the right place.
Yeah, and it's really worth mentioning, like, the reason, one of the reasons officers have to take people for medical evaluation, especially if there's a sense that they've taken fentanyl or other drugs, is really to make sure that they didn't have people going into the jail and then dying in the jail. So it was a way of mitigating that. So while it, you know, for the officers, maybe it makes, burns up a little bit more of their time, the idea was, is right, to make sure that people weren't ODing inside the jail.
That's correct, because they do have medical services at the jail, but they're not equipped, they're not a hospital, and sometimes even though a person that might need to go to the jail might first need to go to the hospital. And so they, I will credit the sheriff's department and the county with, actually they've invested additional funding in that whole medical clearance and processing step to make sure, you know, the first thing is protect life, and that includes the life of the person that you're maybe detaining for whatever the reason is that got into that situation. But preservation of life is foremost.
We do have another caller with a question on the Buckmaster Live line. Matt Neely, go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Tamir. I just saw a video that was posted by the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. It cited a property, 202 East Mojave. Talked about the city investing $500,000, and it had to be condemned due to drug paraphernalia and multiple fires. And then the video also cited a 2023 HUD report that said it gave the city a substandard designation for managing public housing, said that the city only used 86% of its budgeted Section 8 housing vouchers, and it's cited that the city has higher operating costs due to city employees managing public housing having higher salaries than private sector, higher salaries and benefits than private sector. I was wondering if the city had any response to that video.
So I usually don't respond too much to the Tucson Crime Free Coalition directly because I'm not going to cast aspersions on the quality of the information they provide, but that's not always a full accounting of accurate information. Having said that, we definitely have issues in that Mojave area. And that whole area, generally speaking, between Stone and First along Fort Lowell and North and South in the neighborhoods, is actually an area that we are emphasizing a lot of effort through our VIVA program, which is our Violence Interruption and Vitalization Action Program. It's really a violent gun crime reduction program that we've seen be very successful in three other locations in Tucson that we've done over the last now 2 years. And we launched our VIVA efforts in that particular area of town about 6 months ago. So you're going to see some improvement in that area. It is true that we do have challenges in our housing and community development and our management of some of those programs. Generally speaking, there's not a great alignment between the resources we have available and our demands for all of the properties that we maintain. So I think it's a fair criticism to say the city's not exactly, you know, knocking it out of the park in some of the areas of our housing programs and our management of some of our properties. I'm big enough to say that there's certainly room for criticism there. It is one of the top emphasis areas that we have over the next 2 years. We kind of have a tactical and strategic areas we're going to focus on. And that also includes an inventory of everything that we own, manage, and operate. And is it still providing value? Because there are probably some assets that the city has that while we're well-intentioned with what we were trying to achieve with it, it might be actually better in somebody else's hands to do that work. So fair criticism, and certainly not lost on us that we have some work to do there.
Just assuming for the moment that the city is, you know, not expending a significant portion of the Section 8 voucher money that you would have available, that requires private owners of housing to rent to somebody with a Section 8 voucher. And there are some landlords who are reluctant to do that for a myriad of reasons. There is a lot of housing in Tucson that's not up to standard and cannot be rented under Section 8. It, you know, there are a lot of hoops to jump through, but there is also just a lot of, you know, housing needs to be in good shape to get Section 8 money, right?
That's a great point, Dylan, because it takes two to almost three to tango in this case, because you have to have a landlord, you have to have a tenant, and you have to have a voucher or the city, you know, kind of bridging that gap. Mm-hmm. And we have seen gradually over time increased utilization of the vouchers and distribution of the funds for quite a while, and still an issue of a lack of willingness to rent. And so the city did pass no discrimination on source of income, because it was intended to make it so that landlords can't just reject a renter because of, you know, some of the income is coming from a Section 8 voucher. You are hitting on it right away. There are certain units that we just certainly wouldn't put somebody in with a rental and a voucher. One of the recognizing that, I'll also give a shout out to Ward 2 council member Paul Cunningham, who we just recently had a discussion about, and we're looking at how do we deploy a program called Housing Affordability and Urban Strength, which would be to do the city playing a more active role in being matchmaker between landlords and renters who need it, whether it's even a voucher program or not, but the first and last month's rent and somebody who's struggling to come out of houselessness. You know, that their track record as a renter may be, you know, spotty at best. So there's a risk on the landlord side, but we still have like 15 to 20% of the units in Tucson are vacant. So how does the city play a better job in kind of being that bridge between landlord and tenant so that everybody benefits? And so that is something that the council is also working on as we speak.
Sorry, will you repeat the number about how many housing units are vacant?
It's roughly 15 to 20%.
Do you have a sense of why? That's sort of remarkable to me. I mean, we have these discussions about homelessness again and again and again, and there's lots of people who really don't have places. But it sounds like there's homes for people to get into. We just what's the disconnect?
I think a couple of the disconnects are the cost of housing is higher than people can pay. So you might I think it's an issue of gaps. One gap is the empty units at market rate are more expensive than what a willing renter might be able to afford. And this might even be a willing renter who has a job, who can be a good tenant, but they're not going to be able to afford the rent that it costs. So the landlord needs to decide how much is that empty unit worth to me versus having it filled. But the risk that they're taking, anytime they rent, they're taking a risk on the tenant. Is that tenant going to do more harm than good to my unit? And, you know, they've been burned before. And then you have the folks who are on the margins who just can't make that affordability jump. So this is that area of the gaps, I think, is where government does its best work, is trying to fill those gaps or at least mitigate that risk.
Can you talk a little bit? I mean, I know during the discussion on Tuesday about the house program, there was kind of a discussion about like legal possibilities, that whether this was something that this Tucson City could do legally.
That's correct. So that's where the creative and recently named City Attorney of the Year in Arizona. I'll just throw that in for the ranking. They do their little city attorney gathering in Flagstaff, I think a week or two ago, and he was awarded that award. There are elements of house as proposed that are legal, and we can, if we're erring on the side of providing support to or benefit to the tenant, we can usually find a legal mechanism to do so. It's the providing the support or the financial impact or the risk reduction to the landlord is where it's a little bit dicey on whether or not that is compatible with the gift clause in Arizona. So house in its entirety probably has two-thirds of the things we can do readily, easily, and legally, and one-third that we have to still better understand to see how do we fill that gap.
Not that a secondary effect that was helpful to landlords would be, you know, undoable, right? It wouldn't be necessarily illegal as long as the thrust of it, the intent, the mechanism is to help somebody get into housing.
That's correct. It's getting people into housing while giving landlords, and the benefit to landlords is now you're getting an income. An empty unit is now making money. But the risk side of that, having them being willing to take on tenants that they might not otherwise, with the city being in the middle to help bridge that gap, I think is where you get the win-win.
We could talk for a great deal longer about some of these very complex issues, but unfortunately, we cannot. We are out of time. We very much appreciate you phoning in and spending some time with us today. City Manager Tim Tomier, thank you very much.
Thanks for chatting with us.
My pleasure, and I will end with, I go to the Tucson Sentinel for my news, and I appreciate what you do as well, because I think the Sentinel's been a great addition to local news in Tucson, and I think you do a fair and fine job.
Thank you, sir. And we will be back in just a couple of minutes after these messages from some fine Buckmaster Show sponsors.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Buckmaster Show here on KVOI 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm Dylan Smith from the Tucson Sentinel, sitting in for Bill, and joining me here in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio is senior reporter Paul Ingram.
Okay.
And we just had a interview with City Manager Tim Tomier, digging into at least a few layers of the onions of some complex issues that are going on in Tucson.
Yeah, I mean, it's city budgets, right? There's a lot of things happening all at once, and they also have to get themselves really put together a budget in a couple of weeks, which is, it's going to be hard to do.
That's, trying to forecast what's going on with the local economy, with what might be or might not be coming from the state as far as state shared revenue goes, which is totally. A big chunk of the budget, what the feds are up to or not up to, and trying to figure all that out and plan for all those contingencies for a budget that kicks in July 1st mm-hmm. is, that's a big thing to roll up the hill.
Exactly.
And not just at the city, all over local government, there are a whole lot of new folks. This kind of really struck me over the last few days. There are a lot of new faces in, people who have been elected somewhat recently and also, very recently appointed to elected offices.
Yeah, that's totally true. I mean, you think about the Board of Supervisors. I mean, essentially now the oldest member of the Board of Supervisors, longest serving member, I should say, of the Board of Supervisors is Steve Christie, who's, he's been on his fourth term now. Third term or fourth term?
Third, I think.
Third, okay. So he's the guy who's been there the longest. And then, of course, then we have...
Which is not that long.
Which is not that
county
long.
Board of Supervisors terms,
totally,
considering
totally.
That we had a board with people who had been there for 20 years. So
right,
many of them.
Right. And I think the biggest turnover, right, is, of course, Adelita Grijalva. She was just left for the board because she's going to run for congressman for her father's seat after he died earlier this year. And so we have that turnover. So we have a new person. That's Andres Cano, who's just been selected. And, of course, then we have Jennifer Allen, who was just voted in November. So we have those. They're both brand new. You see this is kind of this churn. And you
there's
see
a new member of the city council this week.
Exactly. And then secondly, and so, we have, it's sort of funny, right? We have Karen Ulick, who's been around in the board, but she's actually in an appointed position to replace Steve Kudasichak. Excuse me, I have a cold and it's really starting to pick at me here. And then, of course, then we have a new member with Rocky Perez. So, and he's just voted in. And it's sort of funny, right? He's the second youngest person to be on the board and, on the city council. And so, right, he's immediately going to be thrown into this budget discussion about really how to balance the city's budget and get that moving. He'll be here until the next person is elected. So he gets kind of a short term. It was the discussion on Tuesday was kind of interesting because it was really about, picking somebody who'd kind of be a short termer because otherwise there's three Democrats running and none of those people who will be voted in coming weeks in August and then November, those people weren't really asked to be on the board, but
the council said, "Hey, we're not going to pick somebody who's running
exactly
full
so,
term."
Right, so they don't get the.
But
kind
they
of like
needed
incumbent.
To fill the seat because Councilman Richard Famer said, "I'm resigning
exactly.
for health reasons."
Yeah, so exactly. Then those are both. So we've had two resignations on the city council, and then we've had a resignation on the board, so on the Board of Supervisors. So
and we're going to have a new, brand new member of Congress from part of Tucson.
Totally.
It's a moment of generational change that I think really kind of kicked off with Sharon Bronson resigning from the Board of Supervisors.
I think that's a great point. I mean, Sharon decided that she didn't want to do it anymore, and she resigned. And so all of a sudden, there's been a lot of churn at the Board of Supervisors. And I think we're seeing the same kind of thing at the City Council. So we'll have to see how many people who are sort of young and new are coming in. And Rocky Perez, again, is like 25 years old. So we'll see if there's kind of more people who are a little bit younger who are kind of pushing for these kinds of seats. When we talk about Congress, I mean, we have somebody like Deja Fox, who's very young. So she's running. So she's running against Adelita Grijalva. Adelita Grijalva's
and Daniel Hernandez.
And Daniel Hernandez.
In the D primary.
Totally. And so, we'll have to see how that sort of winds up too. But we have a lot of, not necessarily, with Daniel and Adelita, I mean, those aren't necessarily new faces. They've been around for a little while, but nonetheless, they're going to be jumping into a new position.
In seeing, mostly it's, some baby boomers who are, resigning, sometimes, unfortunately, dying or having health reasons, sometimes just because they figure out, it's, maybe time for me to just retire and enjoy things for a while
right.
and not be caught up in all of that. Is there going to be, an overall kind of change in the tenor of local politics? What are you seeing?
Well, I think in some ways, no. I mean, you see how people kind of jump into the positions with the idea of sort of carrying through there's sometimes the previous person's positions. I mean, you see, you know, how like Rocky Perez is you know, a Democrat. He's not radically different in a lot of ways. He's somebody who's picked, who's been involved in some local government before, so he understands at least some processes. So, you know, see he, you know, with, you still have, like with the city council, you have essentially five Democrats who are going to kind of, you know, think about how to deal with the city budgets. And then with the Board of Supervisors, it's four Democrats, and then of course Steve Christie, who's the lone Republican, and now of course the longest serving member of the Board of Supervisors.
In another local city council, we're seeing the potential for yet another shakeup. The tiny square mile city of South Tucson is having a recall election with three members of the council. We're going to have to face a recall election this summer.
Yeah, and they were just voted. I mean, they're just sort of past the limit for having a recall run against them, correct?
I think, you know, a couple of them have been in office for, you know, a while, but there's, you know, a kind of complete, they have a lot of recall elections in South Tucson.
Really true.
You know, the person who, kind of led the charge to, potentially oust these three members is somebody who is also on the council, and he got back on the council through a recall election after having about a decade ago, maybe a little more, been recalled himself.
Yes.
They can have a whole lot of shakeups there in large part because, you know, voter turnout is not great, and it is such a small city that a literal handful of votes can swing an election there.
And I also think it's one of the things, really, it's really a difficult city to manage. You're a square mile. You don't have a lot of income. Your budget's really limited, and a lot of your services are done by other people. You really rely on Tucson to do fire, to do policing, and to do lots of services. So, I mean, it's I feel like in a lot of ways, it's actually really hard to manage. I mean, it's a really small place, but it also, like, it has some of the toughest problems in the city all kind of combined in this one place. So they have a lot of difficult choices to make all the time. And, you know, it's
and,
easy.
And that makes a lot of people mad.
I mean, when you have a good chunk of money, you can solve your problems, right? And when you have no money and you have lots of pretty serious problems, it becomes a little more difficult than the other city councils who at least have more money to throw around to actually work on solving things that they need to do.
We do need to take another quick break here on the Buckmaster Show. We will be right back.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show here on KVOI 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk. I got to tell you, our friends over in Silver City in Grant County are ready to welcome you back with open arms. Just 3 hours east of Tucson, there's so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. There's plenty of social distancing, visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to see over in Grant County and Silver City, visit southwestnewmexico.org. To tell us a little bit about some things that are a little bit closer to home this weekend, from our sister station, The Drive, Leslie's here with Weekend Watch. What's going on?
Yeah, so if you're into trains, it's pretty cool.
I am into trains.
Train Day tomorrow at the Southern Arizona Transportation Museum. That's going on from 10 to 2. It's a family-friendly event. You can look at the museum's exhibitions, exhibits, and check out trains, participate in art activities, and more. Even better, it's free to attend. I love that.
I may have to head down there. Ever since I was a little kid, just watching trains roll by, locomotives, the whole thing.
I think it's really cool. And that area there is gorgeous right around there, too. Mm-hmm. This is kind of cool. This is the first time they're doing this at the Tucson Asian Night Market is going on. This is a Tucson foodie and local Asian community members putting this together. This is happening at the Tucson Chinese Cultural Center over at 1288 East West River Road from 6 to 10 tomorrow night. It is free to attend. They're putting together featuring food, music, art, and more, which is kind of cool, too.
Nice.
I love farmers markets and those kinds of things.
That
sounds great.
I know. Isn't that cool? I hope it's successful so they can do more. Also, by the way, Music Under the Stars is coming back with the Tucson Pops Orchestra. They're back for their, I think it's their like 70th season or something like that, going on Sunday at 7 o'clock. Something mothers could do. Go take your mom out for this. They're going to be playing a free concert at Reed Park's Demistered Outdoor Performance Center. I love that. Just bring like blankets or a chair. They're going to have food trucks out there, but it is free to attend to watch the performance, which I think is pretty awesome.
And such great weather lately.
This is the time to do it. Yeah. It's not hot yet.
Exactly. And then we also, if you like classic cars, classic car showing going on at Little Anthony's Diner, which is always fun to do. It's really cool to see those cars out there. They're doing one tomorrow night. They're going to be doing one over at Little Anthony's at 7010 East Broadway.
Nice.
Yeah.
Go out and check out some old wheels.
Absolutely. And of course, there's a lot of Mother's Day stuff going on, brunches, and there's actually a scavenger hunt going on for moms and family at Park Place Mall tomorrow, which I thought was kind of interesting. And it's the last weekend for U of A baseball, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Before, I don't know if they're going to be in the playoffs or not.
Well, yeah. But again, amazing weather for that sort of stuff right around
Absolutely.
Now in Tucson. Because as Paul said, it's not murderously hot yet.
No, it's actually really cool at night. It's been beautiful. It's coming. I'm really happy. I know.
I know this weekend is supposed to get up to triple digits, I hear, on Sunday.
No, boo.
I know.
Don't tell us that. You're supposed to give us the cool stuff. Not
it's going
to
cool down, though, next week, I hear.
Foreboding.
Okay, all right, there you go.
How about that?
The oven is preheating is what's happening.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody for listening. Thank you to our Sentinel senior reporter, Paul Ingram, for joining us here in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Tucson City Manager, Tim Telmier, for calling in on the live line. I've been Dylan Smith of the Tucson Sentinel, sitting in for Bill. Got to tell you, the Buckmaster Show is produced by Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is solely, wholly, totally responsible for its content. On behalf of Bill's longtime executive assistant, Rosemary Prant, and the whole team here at Bustos Media, including engineer producer Tom Fairbanks, the man behind the glass, have a wonderful and safe weekend. Happy Mother's Day. Go watch some baseball. Check out some cars. Listen to some cool symphonic music over in the park. Have fun, everybody. Be safe.